Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Be future ready with a pension powered by Zurich's award-winning investment performance.
Now, women's pensions are up to a third lower than those of retired men, according to the latest research we have from the ESRI. In 2010, the average man's pension was €433 per week. It was just €280 for a woman. Why is the gap so wide and what can be done about it? Well, I'm joined now by Jill Kirby, personal finance columnist with the Sunday Business Post and co-author of the TAB Guide to Money, Pensions and Tax 2019, and by Karen O'Reilly, CEO of Flexible Recruitment agency Employmum. Jill, we'll come to you first. The 35%, now that is a significant gap. There are a number of reasons, but would you take us through some of them as to why this gap is so wide?
Yes, of course, Mary. I mean, one of them, of course, is that women generally don't earn as much as men to begin with. Women are more highly represented in industries and sectors where pay is not as high. And think of retail and the hospitality industry and administration jobs. That's both public and private sector, although public sector workers, of course, have better pension outcomes, say, than people in the private sector for the most part. But even in sort of well-paying jobs or well-paying sectors like nursing and teaching and even financial services, there are proportionately more female nurses than there would be female doctors. There are a lot of teachers, but not as many in senior posts like principals. Mm. So, I mean, traditionally, even though that's changing, we all know that's changing. Younger women, young generation, they're just flying away with medical degrees and legal degrees and everything else. So this is changing. But we're talking about, you know, women pensioners right now, or yes, women about to be pensioners. So that generation hasn't enjoyed that as much. The other thing too, of course, Mary, is that women traditionally, changing again, but traditionally, conventionally, take more career breaks, and they take them to take care of their children when they're very young, and sometimes maybe up to 10 years wouldn't be untypical. Mm. And then women get caught again in their 50s because they have elderly parents, and they may be the only daughter, or they may be the only member of the family capable of taking care of the elderly parents, and they leave work again.
That's not necessarily historic, or it may be traditional,
no,
but it still happens. So even the young women coming out into the workforce with, you know, top degrees and joining professions that could take mm-hmm. them to great financial heights,
yep,
they may well take time out, and they're still caught in this trap.
No, absolutely. And that's one thing that's made very clear in this report. And it really is a very good report, I have to say. It's 103 pages, but it's a very good report because they say that more has to be done on a policy side for more equal opportunities, for things like both pay opportunities, but also to distribute more equally the caring responsibility that we all have between male and females, and especially between male and female partners. And also more opportunities, or more maybe discussion about how to get equal career break opportunities as well, so that, you know, women have maybe a little bit more of a leg up to earning more over their career as well. Yeah. So those are all things that
sort
are
sort of equal
in there too.
Career breaks and opportunities. And I think this is a good point to bring you in, Karen O'Reilly. Opportunities to have flexibility in the workplace. How are we getting on with that?
Yes, well, we have come a long way. We've been in business now for 4 years, and we've seen a big shift in employers' attitudes towards flexible work. I suppose when you look at the statistics, third level qualification rates are higher for women in the 25 to 30 year old bracket. They're 60% for women and 52% for men. But then when you look at the CSO results, there are 440,000 women who state their role as home duties. And this is compared to less than 9,000 men. So we have to ask ourselves, why is this so skewed?
That's an extraordinary figure, isn't it? It's just worth repeating. 440,000 women say home duties, 9,000 men.
Yes, So there is so this imbalance really leads on to our gender pay gap and our gender pension gap, which we're talking about here today.
Yeah.
So we have to ask the question, why are women being forced out of the workplace? Why do we have this imbalance? And one of the main reasons is the unavailability of flexible work. The unavailability of flexible work is pushing women out of the workplace because We speak to women every day. Our name is Employ Mum, and they feel they can talk to us when they contact us. We're a recruitment agency, but we specialise in flexible work. Mm-hmm. And they're telling us that they're overwhelmed, they're being forced to leave, their stress levels are through the roofs, their mental health is suffering, and they're desperately unhappy.
Okay, so what do you mean? Sorry, Karen, mm-hmm. I just want to exactly what you mean by flexible work. Because the thing is, if you were in flexible work and you're in a pension scheme, you can continue to make contributions. They might be lower, but you can continue to keep your contributions going. So what sort of flexibility are you talking about built into the workplace? And what types of jobs lend themselves best to flexibility?
Yeah, well, we've just completed a survey with over 700 people responding to it. And the types of flexible work that people would request and are the most requested would be part-time, remote work or part-remote, job share, compressed hours, annualized hours, and the holy grail for parents, which would be term time, which would be allowing people to work while their kids are at school. So those types of flexible work are give people the opportunity to stay in the workplace, and so they don't feel that they are forced out.
And flexibility, as you outline it, can work very well in some jobs, I suppose, and in some big organisations that can accommodate it. What about the small firms, the ISMEs, the members of the Small and Medium Firms Association, where you might have one financial person in the company, one IT person, and you're very heavily dependent on their skill set all the time?
Absolutely. And you picked a good example there with a financial person. A financial person can very easily do perhaps 2 days work from home, which could...
Hello, Karen. Oh, have
sorry.
You're back.
Yeah, I'm back. Yeah. So a financial person could work 2 days from home, and that would be a flexible option for them. Yeah.
Okay. Jill, to come back to you, because if you have flexibility in the workplace, and I I'm really conscious of the fact that is it half the workforce don't have private pensions or occupational pensions
more than that,
anyway?
Mary, more than that now.
Is even more. Yep. But if you have flexible work, it will reduce your pension contributions, perhaps, because you've got to make financial decisions about your income. But you can still keep your hand in.
Yeah, you can take out a PRSA, Mary. Once you leave employment, you can't contribute to the company pension scheme. They can't make payments for you anymore either. But you do have an option of opening a PRSA, personal retirement savings account, and saving into that. The problem is you don't get the tax relief, and that's 40%. So that's a big incentive to be saving for a pension anyway. You don't get that. But once you return, you can basically claim back those tax deductions.
Well, can
you
retrospectively? I didn't know that.
No, you can. The problem is, though, that you might not be going back for a longer time than you thought. I mean, you're still going to lose a lot of years. I think what the government should be doing, of course, and this is a suggestion that should be taken up, is that they should maybe allow couples for the earner, the person who is earning, who isn't just working in the home, to be able to get that tax relief. Out off their tax, because obviously the family is not going to be benefiting from the second salary. But really, there are other things that women should be doing, Mary. I mean, I don't think we can count on the government to sort this out. The auto enrollment pension was supposed to be coming in 2022. That's not going to happen, not in a million years. This was a universal pension. Mm. Everybody, every woman who starts working at 22, 23, 25, whatever, would be signed up to it. Every employer would. That's not going to happen. It just isn't going to happen, unfortunately. Not the way that the economy is going in Brexit and everything else. And they've missed every opportunity to move it on.
So Jill, what advice would you give to your 25-year-old self starting out in the workplace?
I would say join a pension fund. If there's one at the office or in your company, join it. If there isn't one, start your own. Make sure you understand about money, how it works. One of the things that this report reports about is that traditionally and historically, women left to men in their lives to kind of work out the finances of the family. And you have to know how to do that yourself. The other thing that's happening, Mary, is that a lot of people in this country and many others, they're more singletons. You know, there isn't going to be perhaps as much of an opportunity to have a partner, to rely on their income, to rely on their pension. So women have to do that too. They have to become pension savvy. They have to start right away and accept that, you know, if you don't want to be poor in your old age because you are going to outlive most men, that's the demographics are well set out here. Yeah. And if you don't want poverty, you're going
were
to
you
have
that,
to have
were you
your
that
own
savvy
pension.
At 25, Jill?
No, do you know? I'll tell you what, it was really unfortunate. The first few years that I was working, I wasn't doing this job. And when I left, that rule has changed, but when I left and I was not quite 30, I was in my late 20s, you were still able to take your pension contributions with you. So I was buying a house, so I cashed it in. But I did start a pension at 30, Mary. Mm. And I am in a very, very privileged position of having built up a significant pension fund. And the other reason why I did this too, and this is something I say to all my readers all the time, is because I also took very good independent financial advice about how to grow wealth. And we've done this many times.
We have indeed. We have indeed. Karen, is this advice that you take on board? Is it something you discuss with friends and colleagues?
Absolutely, and I wish I had done it myself, to be honest, but I'd be worried about the 440,000 women who are at home and what are they doing about their pension.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
I suppose we've identified this as a problem, and I think we need to find solutions and address this issue now. Mm-hmm. And I think one of those solutions is offering flexible work to everybody who is in the workplace.
Because if you're not working, Karen, for the 440,000, if you haven't some form of flexible work, you've no income. So it's very hard to make any payments into a pension.
Exactly. Yeah. And I suppose it's encouraging, though, that there is a new EU directive that has been voted that will allow parents who have children up to the age of 8 years they will have the right to request flexible work. So this is coming into Ireland in the next 3 years, and it's going to change the whole face of flexible work in Ireland, you know. So this is a positive step in the right direction. It's for parents with children up to the age of 8 years, but we hope that we will eventually come in line with the UK where everybody has the right to.
All right, just a final word, Jill, and it was this morning, I think I heard it, 2 billion being paid on tax relief at the moment on private pensions, not benefiting the majority of people. Do we need to start gradually reducing or removing that sort of pension?
No, that wouldn't be, not reduce it. If you reduce the tax break, people will either not take out a pension at all, or they won't put as much into it. I think we have to be a little bit more creative than that. And I think the main thing is to introduce the universal auto-enrollment pension and do it. They're talking about doing it like an SSIA. So you put your money in and the government tops it up. And that was very popular back in 2000 to 2006. It worked really well. And then I also think that they have to, you have to give younger people maybe some access to their pension fund at some stage.
A right of access.
Occupational pension schemes, because there is that opportunity in the States, in Canada, and other places, and you then are encouraged, it's taxed and everything else, but you're then encouraged to top it up as quickly as you can again. You know?
Well, listen, thank you both very much for joining us. Jill Kirby there, personal finance columnist with the Sunday Business Post, and Karen O'Reilly, CEO of the flexible recruitment agency Employmum.